I'm Chris Mandel, director of the Sedgwick Institute. Welcome to this installment of the Sedgwick Institute Live, where I profile influential thought leaders who make a difference and whose interests lie in the risk and insurance world. Today, I'm talking to Bill Zachary, recently retired group VP of risk management for Safeway Albertsons since 2001. Bill was awarded the Risk Manager of the Year designation in 2014 and was also named the Work Comp Professional of the Year in 2016. With over 30 years in the industry, Bill has a wealth of knowledge which he has generously shared with the industry, and he's sharing some of it with us today. Bill, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a delight to be here.
Thank you, sir. Well, Bill, I always like to start with the personal, so tell me a little bit about your family and what you're doing now in your latest incarnation.
Well, I have a wife. We've been married for about 37 years. I have identical mirror image twin daughters. One's a lawyer and one's a financial analyst. And they both live here on the peninsula in California, and I live in San Carlos. And since my retirement, I've been to Italy for 2 weeks. I've been to Yellowstone, but more importantly, I'm continuing to stay very active in the industry. I've been to the Work Comp Conference in Dana Point. Next week I'll be at the Comp Laude Awards. I'm speaking there. I have two speeches at the National Disability Conference. I have two speeches scheduled for the State of California DWC Conference, Division of Workers' Comp, and I also have currently, I believe, two speeches scheduled for the Risk Insurance Management Society meeting in the springtime at RIMS.
So fantastic.
Still pretty active.
Yeah, you are definitely busy as a beaver. Yeah, as an aside, I had nominated Dr. Richard Victor, our senior fellow, for the Comp Laude Award, and I understand he's one of the finalists, so I guess that'll be finalized in the next couple of weeks.
I'm looking forward to seeing him there. That'll be nice.
Yeah, you know, Rick. So, yeah, you're pretty busy. Are you going to be going back into full-time executive work, or are you just going to play it fast and loose for the time being?
That's a very good question. Actually, I'm looking for the right role that will allow me to help the system improve, try to make it easier and better for the employers, try to make it more efficient for the injured workers to get their benefits, excuse me, and get back to work. I think it's very important that we try. At my stage of my career, I think I would love an opportunity where I can help people do the right thing and make the system work for everybody.
Well, you certainly have a wealth of knowledge you can contribute to that area, and we'll talk a little later about the state of the work comp world and some things going on there. But for the starter for this, why don't you just give me a brief overview of your career and let us know, how did you get into the risk management field?
Well, I got into workers' compensation, actually. I had a degree in personnel in industrial relations, wage and salary administration. And I got married and I needed a job, and a friend of mine said, oh, well, I work at California Casualty. And I said, what do they do? And he says, well, they manage other companies. He didn't say workers' comp. He didn't say claims adjusting. And 2 weeks and four interviews later, I was a claims adjuster. And the irony of that is that my actual introduction to workers' compensation was as an injured worker about 3 years prior to that. I had been a playground director in Daly City, California. I went to break up a fight between two girls. Eight guys attacked me, and the knife went through the back, through the lung, through the diaphragm, through the spleen. I was in the hospital for a week, and they took out my spleen. So I actually had some experience as an injured worker, but my first real job in the insurance industry was as a claims adjuster.
Exactly where I started as well. So many of us did.
And then, so from there, I actually went from an insurance company to a TPA, excuse me, and then from the TPA, there was an opportunity in California for a startup insurance company, and they hired me to be the manager of claims, is what their title, because they were Australian and they didn't understand the United States terms for what the positions were, but that actually ended up being a vice president of claims at an insurance company. And so I was
what
there
kind of claims? Casualty?
Pardon?
Are we talking
it was all workers' compensation.
Okay.
And then I went to, from there, I went to Zenith Insurance Company as a vice president of claims. And then Safeway was looking for somebody to run their workers' comp program. I started there in 01, and in 08, they promoted me to the VP of risk management. And so this sort of ties in with one question that always comes up about the process, and that is, you know, if you're going to give advice to somebody who's in a university about a career, what would that advice be? Mm-hmm. And the answer, I think, is a pretty straightforward one, and that is you get a skill, become very good at that particular skill, and mine started out as claims adjusting, but your career will go where your skills, opportunities, and personality take you. But you really do need a skill starting out within the with whatever industry you get into, you need to have a skill and then let the opportunities come.
So what would you say that skill is that's most valuable in the risk management world?
That's a very good question. Actually, the I started out, again, with a claims adjusting skill, but I think the ability to communicate is very, very important. When you're in specifically in risk management, it's very important to be able to understand the business, the company that you're representing, and then explain, for instance, if you're a risk manager for a company, you need to be able to explain that particular risk in a fashion that puts it in its best light for the underwriters to understand what their risk is and why they would want to partner with you.
Mm-hmm.
So communication is so important with almost anything that you do. It's you need to understand the other person's perspective. You want to understand what are their financial motivations. And then from there, you can communicate. If you can communicate well with them, you can end up with exceptionally good programs.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, I think it's an extra challenge in the risk discipline. I've always advised my students that, you know, watching how much risk speak, as I call it, you actually use is important, because you can lose people real quick in some of the jargon.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very solid point in terms of there's a tendency, particularly in workers' compensation, to use the acronyms and the initials rather than really explain what the issues are. And when you do that with some employers, or you do that with even certain underwriters, they don't know what you're talking about necessarily.
Yeah.
And so trying to create clarity in the conversation by using language that resonates with that individual is very, very important. You're right, Chris, you're absolutely on target on that one.
Yeah. Hey, listen, before I forget about it, since you had such a dramatic start and experience of your own with work comp, was that a good experience in terms of how you were treated with the work comp claim that you had back in the day?
Actually, there's some irony to that, and that is that the California State Compensation Insurance Fund handled that claim, and the surgery happened at Seton Medical Center in Daly City. And I was appointed several years ago by Governor Schwarzenegger and reappointed by Governor Brown to be on the board of the State Compensation Insurance Fund. I know that I'm the only board member who's had experience with the state fund as a claimant. And the other bit of irony is that I'm on the quality assurance board for the Seton Medical Center. Our local congresswoman asked if I would participate with that particular institution. And so I am now on the boards of the company that administered my claim and the company that did where the surgery took place. And so, and your question is exactly the same question, frankly, that I get from many of the frontline claims examiners at the State Fund. They keep asking, how did we do? And the answer is they did pretty well.
Yeah,
right. I think they tried to communicate about what the benefits were, and I had a strong desire, obviously, to get back to work. I was, even though I was in the hospital for a week, I was in an accounting class that I couldn't miss very much. So literally, I got out of the hospital on a Sunday and was back in school on a Monday kind of routine, because I was paying my way through college at the time.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you had a good experience, as bad of a situation as that started out to be.
Well, the important part about that is that I've found that because of that, for me, workers' compensation is extraordinarily personal.
Mm-hmm.
And Absolutely. Taking great care of the injured workers is extraordinarily important with me. And so the nice thing about workers' compensation is that if you do the right thing, if you provide the right care, if you get the benefits on a timely basis, you take great care of the injured workers, a vast, vast majority of them really want to get well and go back to work, and they do so, and it's much less expensive than if you create friction or obstacles in terms of what's going on with the injured worker and how to get the benefits to them. So
yeah.
It's a nice industry to be in. I have the experience. It's personal to me. And then also, by doing the right thing for the injured workers, you can significantly cut the costs of workers' compensation. The example I have is that when I started at Safeway, the total workers' compensation costs at that time were $218 million. And frankly, the examiners were at war with the injured workers. And the second day on the job, I walked out in the claims department. I said, the war stops today. These are your co-workers. They're not the enemy. And they looked at me like I was from the moon. But ultimately, by focusing in on the right things, we were able to bring the annual budget for workers' compensation down by more than $108 million.
Wow, that's huge. Well, I used to have a $150 million budget at PepsiCo, but I never thought I'd hear a bigger number, but I guess the Safeway Albertson system is pretty huge.
Well, that was just Safeway before the merge.
Mm, yeah.
The irony is that after the merger, it went back up to $218 million, and we were starting working with Sedgwick and others to implement the programs to bring the cost back down to what we thought we could achieve.
Well, we thank you for that business. Hey, listen, before we get too far from it, I know a lot of people are always interested in how people like you and I make the segue from claims management, as we both started in, to the risk management world, and how, you know, tough or easy that was. What would you say about that? Because I think there's a lot of people, even in my own company, who would say, how do I get into that risk management world that seems pretty diverse and interesting?
That's a good question. And I had worked with the management at Safeway as their vice president of workers' compensation. And my boss, who oversaw both risk management and workers' compensation, came to me and said, I think what we need is your vision and a drive in the risk management area. And he said, and we're going to make you the risk manager. And when I started out, I did not have aspirations to be the risk manager at Safeway. But as things went along, I saw how, if we integrated things correctly, we could see some significant improvements in the quality of coverages and things that we weren't quite achieving. And so I think I didn't really lobby for it, but my boss, who was a pretty smart guy, said, I want to make a change. And so he essentially...
In light of both of us starting in the claim world and making our way into risk management, I think a lot of people like to understand, how do we do that? What are the hurdles to it? And if you want to go in that direction, you know, how do you make that work?
I think that's a very good question. How do you transition from claims or some other section into the risk management area? I think that there are several parts about it. And part is there are certain people who are lifelong learners. And one of the fortunate things about my wife is that as a principal, she creates a standard internally, if you will, within the family of trying to continue to improve and learn and not becoming static. And so what happened was our boss gave me an opportunity to move from the vice president of workers' comp to the vice president of risk management. And for the next several years, basically, I went to class and I went to town on learning. And the first thing I did was to find who I would have regular contact with that would help bring me up to speed in the areas that I did not have background or experience on. And that was primarily the brokers, frankly. And one of the jokes is I would call every morning on the way to work and talk to one broker for an hour. And then on the way home, I would talk to him for another hour. And a lot of that was me trying to understand what are the issues, how's the finance work, how does the reputations that we have as a company within the industry, how do we improve those processes, and what do we do to get better results? And it was very, very interesting and a lot of fun learning a whole new set of skills to go on top of the workers' compensation claim skills.
Yeah, it's a great discipline. And, of course, but so is the claims discipline, where, you know, no 2 days are the same, no two claims are the same. So there's a lot of diversity there as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, let me ask you about what the most significant accomplishment is for you thus far. I know you got some runway ahead of you for more big things, but what would you say the most significant accomplishment is?
Well, I became very involved with legislations and regulation and amicus or case law here in California. I was very involved with Arnold Schwarzenegger's team when we put together a bill, SB 899. That bill saved the employers of California $15 billion a year. And part of the reason it was successful was that once we got the bill passed, I organized a group that helped create some of the regulations which would make sure that the savings that were intended were achieved. And then I also put together another group of employers who would work on the case law or amicus efforts to make sure that what we had accomplished would not be undone through bad case law. And because most workers' compensation systems, it's a three-legged stool. It is legislation, regulation, and case law. And before my involvement, the employers had not been involved with regulations. Before my involvement, they had not been involved with the amicus effort. And I was determined, historically, whenever there was a reform, the employers would gang together, work hard to get some reforms, declare victory, and go home. And I wasn't going to let the declare victory and go home thing happen. I was very interested in making sure that we finished the work by making sure that the regulations were there and that the case law was done correctly.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big deal.
Well, $15 billion, I think it was one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's signature successes during his entire time as the governor for California.
Yeah. Well, that's an awesome accomplishment. But I have to congratulate you on your Risk Manager of the Year award. I'm sure you had fun during that year of recognition that ensues, and it's a great accomplishment to top off a career like yours for sure.
I felt extraordinarily honored that I would be considered for that award. And it was a very interesting process to go through the scrutiny to become that. And you're right, it is a very heartening thing. But quite frankly, part of the fun part about that was the next year I was involved with the judging for the next crop, and to read the various successes and programs that they had was a great learning experience for me and part of the continuing education process, because as I was reading each of the individuals' for the qualifications and what they had accomplished, I was thinking to myself, okay, now how could I take some of this and apply it to what I'm doing on a daily basis? How can I learn from this? And it was a really nice experience being a judge the next year.
Yeah, I remember it well. You do learn a lot in the process. One thing you never know, though, when you're up for this is who your competition is. So you can only hope it was a good run with others, as it usually is, people very well accomplished.
It was a wonderful experience. My boss came to the award ceremony. My family was there, and Dave North, a lot of my friends in the industry were there. It was a pretty big deal for me personally, and I really, really was quite touched by the outpouring of support that came with that. It was quite amazing.
It is. Hey, let's talk a little more about work comp. So you spent a lot of time in this area, particularly, as you just pointed out, in California and other important states. And as you know, the system is under a lot of scrutiny right now from Congress and elsewhere. A lot of allegations that the system is broken and that it needs to be possibly federalized or at least scrutinized by people like DOL as it used to be. What's your view of the state of the system and where do you think it's going?
That's a very good question. I think that there are inconsistencies, clear inconsistencies, in benefit levels by states. And there are some inherent problems within certain states. I think New York, the employers are concerned about the continuing problem of having to pay for the same body part again and again, for instance.
Mm.
But if you take a step back and you look at what you have is you have either an industrial-related accident or a non-industrial-related accident. So it's OCC or non-OCC.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the discussion can be that medical care shouldn't be different one or the other. There is some logic to that. However, one of the problems that has plagued the workers' compensation area is the fact that sometimes because it's a fee for service in many areas, the incentives are not aligned to get the best outcomes. Historically, California has shown that when they gave unfettered control to the frontline treating physicians, the cost exploded.
Mm-hmm.
The other side also is on the indemnity side, for instance, on temporary disability, whether it's two-thirds or however you want to calculate it, OCC or non-OCC, there's long-term, short-term disability as well as the workers' compensation. But the one thing that really, really doesn't apply to overlap is the permanent disability.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I think if you take a big step back, look at the entire system, that's where you're creating or seeing most of the inconsistencies.
Mm-hmm.
How do you measure permanent disability? And quite frankly, another big question or problem is, what is the apportionment? How much of that disability is caused by that employment or that injury versus aging, pre-existing injuries, whatever?
Yeah. Every state has its own statute. It's got its own benefit schedule, own determinations of permanency. I mean, it's always been that way. So, I mean, do you subscribe to the theory that the system's broken, or does it just need some improvement?
I think that I subscribe to the theory that if you can get the incentives aligned within the states, you can get appropriate outcomes for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes back to incentives being in the right place to get the right outcomes.
Yeah.
And my specific example is if you give – did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay, if you give applicants' attorneys fees based on the amount of permanent disability, they are incentivized to disable their clients, not to get them back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so the big question is how can you identify where the incentives are and how can you align them so that it will – get the best outcome for the injured worker and the lowest cost for the employer.
Yeah. Well said.
Frankly, though, you know, the costs in the San Francisco Peninsula, which is one of the more expensive places in the nation, are naturally going to be somewhat different than in a rural place in Mississippi.
For sure.
And but what is the there is inconsistency in terms of how much is a finger worth, how much is an arm worth, how much is that person really disabled? And part of the getting further into this, I think part of the problem is that we lack clear definition of what is permanent disability, and most jurisdictions lack clear definitions of what apportionment is, and nobody that I know of in the entire system measure apportionment.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's broken. I think if you look at the overall if you look at the overall system, it's providing benefits to the injured workers. It's getting people back to work. However, can it be improved? Of course it can be improved. And the questions become, how do you improve it? One of the other things that I think is a brand new challenge that's out there is if you really look at the cost drivers, I think that the biggest cost drivers are what I would call catastrophic claims. And the catastrophic claims are no longer the quadriplegics, paraplegics, severe burns, because those have been, by and large, they still occasionally occur, but not nearly with the frequency that they used to.
Mm-hmm.
You still have these so-called catastrophic claims, and what makes them catastrophic? It's the opioid addictions. It is the poor employer-employee relationships. It's the amount of lost time. It's litigation and these other things that will take what otherwise should have been a $10,000 or $15,000 case and make it into a $500,000 or $600,000 case.
Yeah, well said. Well, that's one of the reasons that, you know, we've turned our attention and, you know, made our motto now, Caring Counts. At Sedgwick, we really believe it's all about how you take care of the employee. And if you make them the priority, if you actually treat them as a consumer, which in effect they really are, you're naturally going to get better results up till the point when, you know, third parties intervene with the wrong motivations and different agendas.
And I think that insight's really important. For instance, we have an alternative or had an alternative, do have, we being Safeway, had an or has an alternative. It's hard not thinking yourself as still being there, quite frankly. But there's an ADR program at the Safeway, and we had the ombudswoman asking whenever the injured worker got an attorney, we asked her to find out what was the essential cause for the attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And the insight was pretty good, and that was that the frontline supervisor, not the HR director, not in our case the store manager, but the local frontline supervisor, the person in charge of the front end or the person in charge of the flower department or whatever it was, had stopped calling or talking or interfacing or dealing with or taking care of the injured worker once the injury took place.
Mm-hmm.
And so the opportunity there is if you can educate the frontline supervisor on how to communicate with somebody who was injured on the job, you probably have a very strong chance to reduce the litigation rate. And quite honestly, in my entire career, I had always been focused on not necessarily that person, but more on the HR. As a claims adjuster, I would call and get the basic information, and usually it was not the frontline supervisor, but it was the HR person or somebody else.
Yeah.
And so we weren't getting to the right person to educate them on what needed to be done and how it should be done in order to avoid the litigation.
Well, that's a lot of what Caring Counts is about. I would also say it's a lot of what option legislation and option plans tend to focus on, you know, improving that relationship between the employee and the employer, as well as other stakeholders in the process. As you said earlier, if you can get the communication done well, then all things will work better.
I agree 100%. And The parallel to that, going back to risk management, is I talked to another risk manager earlier today, and she said that she thought the key to success in risk management was understanding who your customer was. And she said, I think as a risk manager, my customer is not only the company I work for and the individuals within the company, but the underwriters, they need the information correctly, and the brokers. And so understanding who your customers are and then taking great care of your customers. And you come back to the injured worker, a lot of people don't perceive the injured worker as a customer. As a claims manager, one of my axioms was to the claims examiners was, you are the arbiter to solve problems between your two customers. Mm-hmm. You have the employer who thinks an injury didn't take place. You have the employee who does think an injury took place. You, as the claims adjuster, need to solve that problem between your two customers.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very, very well said. So where do you see the risk management discipline going in the next period, whatever that is, next 10 years maybe?
I think risk management is going to be one of the more exciting areas to be in because, again, part of the responsibility that you have as a risk manager is to explain what your company does to the underwriters in a fashion that will help you get the best coverages. And you have to work with the underwriters to make sure that you're getting the right coverages. And so when you see such huge transitions going on in the self-driving cars or the Internet of Things. Are you familiar with the Internet of Things?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that breach that occurred last week was a huge, amazing process in terms of you say to yourself, for instance, do I as an employer, is my company covered for this? Are we creating risk? Is our toaster out there in the conference room hacked so that it is being used to attack the cloud? Mm-hmm. And part of that's your IT responsibility of your company, but part of that is yours in terms of saying, okay, how do I explain to the underwriters what we've done to mitigate that risk? Mm-hmm. And the associated education that you get on all of these changes and all of these exposures is such an exciting time to be in risk management. It's a fascinating thing.
Well, I'm happy to report that the universities are getting religion on this more all the time. More and more risk management degrees at both the undergraduate and graduate level are being minted around the country. So that's a good trend.
I agree, and I've been graciously invited to go up and speak in front of several classes at Cal State Sacramento and other colleges in terms of giving them insight as to what it's like to be a risk manager and how to do things. And so it's fun to be able to go back out into the colleges and try to spend a little time with the students and say, all right, this is what I'm seeing. This is how it looks from my perspective. And what are you seeing as a student from your perspective? It's a fascinating opportunity out there.
Yeah, agree. So let's go narrow. I have to ask you this, since we're in the claim management business, how important are TPAs and independent claim professionals to the success of risk management, in your view?
I think that's a very good question. I think the TPAs are a vital part of providing options to employers. If you have a 100% coverage by the insurance company, usually they don't want to use the insurance company might not use a TPA, but there are a lot of companies that take part of that risk, and with that part of the risk, they want to manage some of the exposure and some of the process. Mm-hmm. And I think the TPAs give a vital option You have basically the 100% insured, you have the TPA process, you have the self-administered self-insured, and each of those within the industry, I've seen massive successes and high-quality work coming out of them, and I've also, frankly, seen some miserable failures as we've gone along. And so I think though, the TPA process is very important to give many employers options and opportunities to adjust the claims adjusting and to adjust the risk process to fit that company's needs.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you think about it, you know, the way the employee gets treated, and we're just talking about work comp for a minute, in the process of their claim being handled by a third party has everything to do with how they come back to work and affect morale and how they view their employer, you know, going forward. So there's a huge opportunity to get it right and also a huge opportunity to screw it up.
Oh, I agree.
All right, Bill. Well, I think we've covered the landscape for today. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
I, as I've said just a few minutes ago, I think that risk management is evolving and has huge opportunities going forward as the question of who an employee is changes because of Uber and the outsourcing of certain things. All of these processes I look at as opportunities for to stay current with what's going on in the world and being relevant, because the insurance process itself, by and large, allows companies to withstand catastrophic events in a fashion that lets them be successful in the long run on an economic basis. It's a vital part of business, and most people don't understand how important it is or what it can do. And with the right effort and the right focus, I think that you can make sure that the protection is provided and it's done at a very reasonable cost for the employers of the United States, of the world, and it makes things competitive. So I'm very optimistic. I think it's a great time to be in insurance. And I think there are some huge challenges out there, but I think those challenges can be met with the right people and the right energy.
Well said. Yeah, I mean, it's been an old adage that insurance greases the skids of commerce, but I tend to think that risk management adds yet another layer of grease in there, making it all the more possible to do business well when it's done well, that is. Well, thank you, Bill, for your time and insights.
I had a great time. Thank you, Chris, for spending the time with me today. It was a lot of fun.
You bet. So to my listeners, you can find my and Dr. Richard Victor's speaking and writing schedules as well as other resources at www.sedgwickinstitute.com. Please consider joining the Institute's LinkedIn group titled Sedgwick Institute, where we dialogue daily on issues of importance to stakeholders in the risk and insurance world. Till next month, when we'll have our next installment of SI Live, where I'll interview Dr. Tom Perry, CEO of the Integrated Benefits Institute. In the meantime, I urge you to use your expertise and influence to make a difference whenever and wherever you can to make this industry better. And remember, caring counts.